India, of course, is at the opposite extreme, with a population that is 5,000 times larger than Iceland's. India's challenge, completely different from Iceland's, is to transform a densely populated subcontinent of subsistence farmers into a modern and largely urban society. Hundreds of millions of people live in poverty. Population growth has been high, with India's population tripling between 1950 and 2000 from 350 million to 1 billion. In the past two decades, India has finally achieved a long-awaited development breakthrough. A big boost of agricultural productivity in the 1960s and 1970s, supported by international science and donor assistance, began to transform large parts of subsistence farming India into commercial agricultural regions. Gradually in the 1980s, and then rapidly in the 1990s, several urban centers became internationally competitive in exports of manufactures and information-based services. Fertility rates came down and literacy rates rose, and both trends helped to strengthen India's economic transformation. Yet with 70% or so of India's population still living in villages and with profound ecological stresses, India continues to face an enormous challenge of development and transformation. Indonesia is yet a third case, a tropical archipelago densely populated like India, but more open to international trade as a result of its insular geography. Approximately 95% of Indonesia's population lives within 60 miles of the coast, compared with only 38% of India's. The coastal proximity of Indonesia's population is conducive to international trade, so it is not surprising that the ratio of exports to GNP in Indonesia stood at 31% in 2003, compared with India's 14%. The same proximity has no doubt supported Indonesia's relatively quicker urbanization, which in the same year stood at around 46%, compared with just 28% in India. These brief examples underscore the fact that each country faces a distinctive challenge based on its own unique geography, demography, and history. Nonetheless, we can offer at least a few valid generalizations. First, a sound development strategy for any country requires attention to three geographic dimensions: the rural, largely agricultural sector, the urban, largely manufacturing and service sector, and the national infrastructure grid, roads, power, telecoms, that links together all parts of the economy and connects the economy with neighbors and with world markets. Second, at each stage of transformation from a subsistence economy to a knowledge-based economy, both the public sector and private sector have important and complementary roles to play. Without adequate public sector investments and leadership, the private sector will be unable to operate effectively. Development is inherently an interplay between market forces and public policies. Even though we expect the private sector to be the engine of growth, the public sector must provide critical public goods such as infrastructure, which cannot be adequately provided by the private market, and without which the private sector cannot thrive. There are six kinds of public interventions of great importance. The first is help for the destitute, who constitute a very significant proportion of the population in the poorest countries, so that the poor can stay alive, meet basic needs, and step onto the ladder of development. That requires public financing to ensure that the poor have access to basic health care, adequate nutrition, primary education, safe drinking water, and other essential needs. The second is the public provision of key infrastructure, roads, ports and airports, power, telecommunications, and broadband connectivity, all of which are required by the private sector in order to flourish, as well as other public goods such as infectious disease control and environmental management. If core infrastructure is left to the private market, there will tend to be underprovision, monopoly prices, and exclusion of the poor. Other public goods such as disease control are also dramatically underprovided by the market. The third is the provision of a sound business environment, including monetary stability, protection of property rights, contract enforcement, and openness to international trade. The fourth is the provision of social insurance, to ensure that all parts of the population can maintain their economic security and well-being in the face of inevitable economic dislocations. The fifth is the promotion and dissemination of modern science and technology. Like infrastructure, scientific inquiry can be left to the market, But the benefits of new knowledge do not reach all of society, since they are protected by copyrights and patents for commercial reasons. The sixth is proper stewardship of the natural environment. The relative importance of these six challenges varies systematically during the climb up the technology ladder. Public provision of basic needs must come first, at the very bottom of the ladder. The public sector's support of science and technology, while important at every stage of development, surely must expand as an economy develops. Similarly, basic infrastructure and primary education are vital at the lowest economic rungs, while high-quality university education for much of the population is vital for a highly developed economy.